Yeah, I would say that that narrative is definitely much more American. Here, it was much stronger about the building up of industry and institutions. So Jerusalem, the heavenly city, those kind of images were employed more frequently, whereas absolutely the American narrative is the pilgrim, you know, seeking the promised land. That's a great question, because it does, the American national myths are very particular to that context, and it's interesting to kind of compare the two. Yeah. Linda? Well, I would say, I think that the Métis have grown in their rights, so they've been just quite recently considered in some ways, in other ways still not, but definitely a lot more Métis are able to get Indigenous status and are able to have access to things like hunting rights. Whereas there's an Indigenous artist that I follow, and he's Métis, and he, in some of his displays, he shows the papers for his ancestors being arrested for hunting, for example. And so if you hunted out of season, so to speak, or, you know, this very limited, controlled, then you were arrested. And so the Métis were very heavily policed for hunting. So getting their rights to hunting back has just been very recent. So I would say that that's a modern advance. Jennifer? Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that definitely studying this time is fascinating, because it really does kind of upset the slogan on our license plate, even, for example. Ontario, yours to discover. Whose idea is that? Like, it's so bad. It's so obviously, you know, tied to this racist history. Like, why isn't it changed? And I think this, like, our liturgies, our hymns, a lot of them, yeah, absolutely do reflect this. And so there is a debate about whether you just kind of get rid of them and write new songs that are more socially acceptable nowadays, but then maybe in 20 years we'll be like, oh my gosh, look at how sexist that was, or whatever. And so it's hard to say. I think that definitely, like, having opportunities for education and to then say, like, let's talk about how this theology is still at work. Like, this is really, like, self-governance is still something that most communities don't want to see. Like, if you ask my little sister, when she's younger, you say, Audrey, what is your ideal political situation? Are you liberal? Are you conservative? She would always say, no, I just think that the local Indigenous nation should, like, run the laws of the area. So she's here tonight. So yeah, like, what, thank you. What do you, you know, what would sovereignty really look like if the way that we did policing, the way that we did our legal system, was actually based on Indigenous values of governance? And so I think starting with the 94 calls to action is a really great kind of first step into addressing some of these issues. But I think as churches, we definitely have a responsibility, because these theologies, as I tried to show in my presentation, they really had very real concrete implications. And so I think that we have a responsibility as the steward of those theologies to then try to subvert them. And so, yeah, I mean, a non-offensive liturgy is always, makes me feel a little more comfortable than, you know, singing some of those hymns that are so staunchly from this time. don't know if that answers. Other questions?
Well, there's even a critique of the book of Joshua, because so much of the language you're using, mm-hmm. it may not reflect the story of Exodus, but it certainly reflects the notion of almost manifest destiny that mm-hmm. God is telling us to come into the land and to dominate the land and
totally.
To take possession of the land and to build our little piles of stone in different places to show that we own the land.
Yeah.
So I would say that a conquering mythology.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the Romans. I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
Genghis Khan. I'm sure everyone has a conquering mythology to justify taking those things away. But some of those things are within our sacred texts.
Totally.
So we need to, I think, critique them and perhaps use them as a historical reference rather
mm-hmm.
than as a prescriptive. I mean.
Yeah.
I think there's some, and I'm not sure. I wonder how we can do that.
Yeah, I think one of the ways that we can do that is, like, it's one thing to critique a theology, and it's another to, like, look critically at how that theology has informed policy in the areas that we live. And then to try to say, okay, well, if we want to renounce this, you know, theology of domination and, taking resources, then what is our embodied practice when indigenous communities are under threat? For example, you know, Victor Mine and communities in the north that are really badly impacted by resource extraction, and what is our, you know, how do we be in solidarity with those communities and how do we try to support them? As we, as, you know, as some of us here as Christians kind of have a new narrative I'm an Anglican priest. Do I identify with these guys who are trying to divide the French and the English Métis? Like, you know, it's tough. But all of us are formed by these stories. So what is the story that we're trying to tell about ourselves as church, and how do we embody that in the world? One more question. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a great documentary I recommend called Trick or Treaty, and it tells the story of, I think it's Treaty 9, I forget exactly, watch the documentary, but it talks about how even the process of writing treaties was quite flawed, and so we have documentation that some European authorities put in clauses that weren't in the original treaties after the fact. So even our treaties are not perfect. And so you'll hear, like, the slogan, honor the treaties. And that is really important, because a lot of indigenous communities sign treaties and have rights to territories that are now being denied them. And that's really important. But some treaties themselves are, you know, even have a lot of manipulation of the indigenous communities written into them. So it's a complicated issue. But for sure, you can see the colonial mentality at work in the way that treaties are handled nowadays.
I just wanted to speak to what was happening now.
Mm-hmm.
There's two things, the Daniels case and the Isaacs report.
Mm.
Daniels case was Manitoba, and Daniels struggled with that for 20 years or more, and passed away, and his son carried the torch. And this was for Métis land claims mm-hmm. in Manitoba. You spoke to that a little bit. And so the Supreme Court of Canada over and over again said, yes, the Métis should have their land. So the government, we've got to talk about it. The trouble is that whenever the Métis wanted something, and they talked to the provincial government, they say, that's not our problem, it's the federal government.
Right.
You go to the federal government, they say, well, it's not our problem, it's the provincial government. You try to deal with it, get something from them. And that went on for years and years. And so both Daniels and the Isaacs report, they just came out recently. On Louis Riel Day, the day after Louis Riel Day, there was a big meeting in Ontario for the Ontario Métis to hear about these things. And the Isaacs report, truth and reconciliation. It says that because it is the Métis are to be speaking to the federal government for the things that were promised.
Hmm.
And they have to do it, and the federal government has got to talk to them now. And so now the Métis are now deciding, speaking now for another year amongst themselves as to what kind of things are we going to look for, and what kind of things would be self-government, as you mentioned it.
Right.
And they would like self-government too, or what would it look like,
mm-hmm.
sort of thing. And so the Isaac Report has points, it's not 94, maybe it's 74. not as many points as the Truth and Reconciliation, but it's things to be looking at.
The Isaac Report was that name. Great, we'll have to check that out. Thank you.